Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we begin the program by talking with you about the prevention, the detection, and the treatment of colorectal cancer. And a couple of guests, they've been with us in the past, and it's great to have them back. Dr. Noelle LeConte is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. LeConte, welcome back. Thank you for being with us.
Nice to be here.
Also with us today, Dr. Gregory Kennedy is an assistant professor of general surgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And Dr. Kennedy, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us back, Larry.
Let's start with how common is colorectal cancer in the U.S.? Is it very common?
Colorectal cancer is the second most common cause of cancer-related death, fourth most common cancer overall.
Okay, so it's pretty common. And is it something of the trends higher, more, less, same?
So colorectal cancer incidence is actually going down.
It is?
It is.
And why? Do we know why?
Well, I don't think we know for sure. There's been some simulation models, you know, by people who are much smarter than I am that can figure out those things that can import lots of different possible reasons. And it looks like about half the reduction is due to people actually getting screening. Predominantly colonoscopy.
And getting that taken care of and so caught before it becomes an issue then, Dr. Kennedy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's the goal of colon cancer screening is to catch these small polyps in the precancerous stage and remove them. And I think to some extent it's working.
Here's a very basic question, but I'm going to ask it because there's probably people who wonder, what's the colon specifically? What does it do?
It's a great question. So we generally think of the colon as just the large intestine. And
yeah.
This is its function is technically to absorb some water and serve a bit as a trash compactor, as people can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the end of the large intestine is the rectum, where yeah. is the vault, so to speak. That's its basic function. So
there you have it. And what are the risk factors that we should be aware of when it comes to colon cancer?
So most patients don't have any risk factors, so that's important to know. But
yeah.
the most important is age. As we get older, our risk of colon cancer goes up. Smoking is certainly a risk factor. Having a family history, especially in a first-degree relative, meaning a sibling or a parent, having had colon cancer or the type of polyp that leads to cancer are important risk factors.
And other things include obesity,
mm-hmm.
And there's some dietary risk factors. And the dietary stuff is a bit more more controversial, perhaps, with low-fiber diets and high-fiber diets, that sort of thing. But most data would suggest that the diet plays some role.
Plays some role, okay.
Right.
And so avoiding certain types of foods or?
Well, we generally think the high-fiber diet is healthy for the colon. So trying to avoid some of the red meats and mm-hmm. things like that, or at least limit it. In moderation, right?
So. Yeah. Dr. Noelle LeConte, Dr. Gregory Kennedy with us today to talk about colorectal cancer and certainly inviting you to join in. I am given the number, so maybe I should give the number and then maybe people will call. You can join us with your questions. Maybe you have someone close to you who has dealt with colon cancer. What do you do to reduce your risk of colon or other types of cancers? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us that address, talk@wpr.org. And you can go to my Facebook page as well at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to post a question there. That we'd be happy to take your question off the Facebook page. Are there some warning signs or symptoms that are associated with colon cancer that could be cause for worry?
So anytime people are passing blood with bowel movements from the rectum, they should let their providers know about that. Other symptoms might include abdominal pain, but the majority of patients have no symptoms.
And what's the likelihood of recovery from colorectal cancer? Mm. Depends, I suppose, on the stage that we're in, Dr. Kennedy?
I guess it depends on how we're defining recovery here, Larry. So if you're asking what's the likelihood of long-term survival? It certainly depends on the stage. The earlier you catch it, as you can imagine, the better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we generally think of colon cancer in stages, stage 1 through 4, 4 being progressed to systemic disease, 1 being sort of localized to the inner layer of the colon itself. Patients with stage 1 disease are essentially cured, and that's generally where we like to see people in stage 1. And then as we move down from 1 to 4, those numbers worsen.
Yeah.
Maybe Dr. Locante wants to pipe in here, since she's the one who has these conversations with patients more frequently.
Right. So. Well, we say that the cure rate roughly goes down by about 25% with each drop.
Mm.
So 75% of stage 2s, roughly 50% of stage 3s. Stage 4s, we can rarely cure patients who have isolated disease in only one organ, but the majority of stage 4 patients are not curable.
Mm.
But the good news, Larry, is that you know you don't even have to wait until you get cancer. You can just get a polyp and get that removed, and polyps become cancer. So the message really is colonoscopies or whatever screening method your primary provider would approve of, that we can actually catch these before they become cancer.
Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple colonoscopies, and they're frankly easy. You don't really know. You go in and suddenly you're finished and you have no recollection of what went on, and it's a very, very simple procedure. It doesn't the timing or the length of time between seems to be fairly long.
Mm-hmm.
It must be a slow acting type cancer.
Well, that's exactly right, Larry. It has to do with the biology of colon cancer. We know that for the most part, and this is for most colon cancers, run-of-the-mill colon cancers, they progress through what we call an adenoma to carcinoma sequence. So the benign polyp, the adenoma, out to the cancer itself, the carcinoma. And for them to progress along that, they have to accumulate a number of genetic mutations.
Oh.
These are accumulated over the series, over the course of years, not months. So if a person who's at average risk, no family history, no personal history, no family history of polyps, average risk patient like myself, for example.
Sure.
If I have a normal colonoscopy at age of 50, my next colonoscopy would be 10 years, 60.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So we kind of know that this is a long, long disease process.
Lynn in Chippewa Falls has a question for the two of you. Let's go there. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I'm going to get right into this. I was diagnosed stage 4 colon cancer at the age of 49, and I have been treating now for 3.5 years. And I understand that the prognosis is not very good, but I was just wondering if there were any other chemo drugs coming down the pike that may give me a little more longevity.
Dr. Locante?
Yeah, good question. So, yes, we do research every day to develop new drugs. Most of the patients with colorectal cancer are being routed into what we call phase 1 or early developmental studies right now because there aren't any large national studies looking at especially promising drugs, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't get involved in an earlier study to try and get access to these new drugs that aren't yet on the market. I think there are a couple that look interesting, and colon cancer PARP inhibitors seem to be rising up. And then we're getting a little bit more sophisticated at looking at the specific mutations within your tumor to determine if you would be responsive to certain other types of drugs like a PI3 kinase inhibitor.
So there are some options out there.
Yeah, it's almost all clinical trial based right now. Nothing on the horizon for FDA approval.
So how would Lynn go about finding out about these?
So you start with your oncologist, and there's also a website called clinicaltrials.gov where you can type in some information about yourself and your tumor and what kind of study you're looking for, and it'll spit out for you everything that's available across the nation. They can also call Cancer Connect at the UW Carbone Cancer Center, and we're happy to walk them through the available studies that we have. We have the only phase 1 program in the state.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Lynn, does that help?
Thank you very much for the information.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Jim in Wisconsin Rapids, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I just have a question. I'll take my answer off the air. I've had a couple colonoscopies, but my question is why do they seem to be so expensive? The ones that I've had, they kind of line up 20 people in a row and bang, bang, bang. And but at like $3,500 a shot, I'm just kind of curious about why they're so expensive. Mm.
All right. Well, Dr. Kennedy, well, you want to take a crack at that?
That's a great question, Jim. And I'd ask my CEO of the hospital the same one, I guess. I don't have a good answer for you, I'm afraid. For what it's worth, that expense doesn't come to the person actually performing the procedure. So I don't know what to say other than that. I'm sorry, Jim.
It is a test that involves sedation, which it sometimes can be complicated for patients, and there are risks of perforation. It's very rare, and they're done in a hospital setting. I think all of those can contribute to the increased cost.
Yeah. Steve in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. Yes, my wife and I have had several colonoscopies, and we're approaching 70, and we were told that once you get to be 70, I mean, that you're done now. You don't have to have any more. But I also heard that age is a risk factor.
Good question. So what you're driving at is that the large body that looks at preventive care in the United States recently recommended that we stop screening for colon cancer at the age of 75. I'm also a geriatrician, so hearing that news was saddening to me because there, one person 75 is not another person 75. You can be extremely healthy and have a 20-year life expectancy, in which case screening for colon cancer might make a whole lot of sense. You could also be 75 and have a lot of other diseases that might not, you know, make screening for colon cancer make a lot of sense.
Well, we were hopeful that we were done with colonoscopies.
You technically are. You technically are, but I think 75 would be the end of the recommendation. It's worth talking to your primary care doctor about whether they think, you know, continued screening for you would make some sense. But technically, the recommendations for average risk patients is to stop at 75.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jack in Superior, we turn to you next. Hi, Jack. Jack, are you there? Oh, lost Jack. Well, let's take an email from Chris in Chicago. Is a vegetarian or vegan diet associated with lower rates of colon cancer?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually, Chris. The data on this are, like I say, pretty controversial as far as where the high-fiber diet actually reduces the risk for colon cancer. There's some evidence that a high-fiber diet reduces risk of a left-sided colon cancer, but perhaps not a right-sided colon cancer. Mm. So certainly we think that diet plays a role, but it's not the whole story. So I guess my recommendation to all the patients is everything in moderation. So if you can tolerate a high-fiber diet, do so. But take the red meats and whatnot in moderation. So you think you're ahead of the curve as a vegetarian.
So left-sided and right-sided?
There's some evidence that perhaps these tumors may be biologically different. And this is just a fairly hot area of research right now, Larry, of people looking at what causes a right-sided colon cancer and that more the early part of the colon where it absorbs water versus the part of the colon that's more the trash compactor. And are there different genetic mutations?
All right.
So yeah, your colon is shaped like an upside down U in your belly, so you can split it in half.
That way. Okay. I wondered. I was trying to figure out what the difference was.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Dr. Noel LaConte, Dr. Gregory Kennedy, our guest here as we talk with them about dealing with colon cancer. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking colon cancer today with Dr. Noel LaConte, Assistant Professor of Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and Dr. Greg Kennedy, also an Assistant Professor in General Surgery at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have both of them along, and thank you for listening. I'm wondering, how do we stack up, Dr. LaConte, here in Wisconsin when it comes to things like screening? Are we pretty good here?
Yeah, we're pretty good. So when you look at who has ever had a sigmoidoscopy, which is one way we can screen for colon cancer, or a colonoscopy, And when you compare us to all 50 states, we actually rank number 13th.
Okay.
And what that number specifically is that 67.2% of our population over 50 average risk patients have had at one point in their life had had screening for colon cancer. To put that in perspective, the worst state is at 52.6% and the best state is at 74.3%.
Okay. So we're
up there. We could do a little bit better. We know that across the nation, only 60% of patients have had a colon cancer screening, even though it is the second most common cause of cancer death.
Yeah. Amy and Viroqua, I want to give you a chance to join in. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks. Excellent show. I have a daughter. She's 8 now. At 2.5, she was diagnosed with juvenile polyposis. She had 10 polyps in her colon, had them removed, and every year we go and have a colonoscopy. I'm just wondering, they're non-cancerous polyps. I'm just wondering if this increases her chance of cancer in the future.
Okay. Dr. Greg Kennedy, about it?
That's a great question. These types of polyps and juvenile polyps are technically called hamartomas, which, to my memory, did not actually increase risk for colon cancer long term. They can come back, of course, and they tend to bleed, which is probably, I suspect, how your daughter ultimately presented. But they don't really change her risk for colon cancer per se.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a good one.
All right. And it may make the colonoscopy maybe a little bit trickier to interpret if she has a lot of polyps there or hamartomas.
Yeah, this last one was her fifth one, and she actually didn't have any polyps this time, which is unusual, but they did diagnose her with celiac disease because she had high lymphocytes in her small intestine. So, but now that the polyps are gone, I was just curious what the long-term risk was. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Sounds like it's pretty good. Thank you, Amy, for calling. Eric in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Well, and good morning. Great show. Brief history. My father was diagnosed with colon polyps over several years, and the doctor recommended that his two sons, my being one of them, also get checked. And I did not have health insurance. I was self-pay. And consequently, after going through the process, of course, I shared this with several other people that had gone through this, and they were quite alarmed to hear that I was never anesthetized or put under any kind of local anesthetic. And I was quite surprised to find out that all of them had, but they also had health insurance. Hmm. And I guess I would pose that question, why would that be? And I don't think it was a doctor's call. I'm sure it was the bean counter, you know, at the hospital or somewhere making that call.
And it was a full colonoscopy, not a sigmoid oscopy?
It was the full Monty. I'm sure.
Okay. All right. I'm just wondering because the other one is usually you don't have anything.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I could describe to you the process, but I don't think anybody on the air would like to hear about it.
No.
And,
okay. Well, what do you?
I'm curious to know if this is something that's familiar. And there is a side note to this. My ex-partner worked in a hospital, and I was injured in an industrial accident that was covered by insurance. And I noticed that when I was going in on a regular basis for my appointments, that I would see people coming in and coming in and coming in and going before me. And this became such a pattern that I finally started informally questioning people waiting in the waiting room about when their appointments were and with which doctors. And I consequently started to find that there was a pattern that I was being bypassed, and they were taking people who had later appointments with the same doctors, and yet I was being bypassed. And I asked them the questions, like, are you covered by insurance up front? And they were like, yes. And my partner informed me this was a regular occurrence, that if you did not have the insurance up front that they get paid for right away, you do get the secondhand treatment, although the people at the hospital maintained this never happened.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get a comment here.
Yeah. So being uninsured and getting colon cancer screening is a big problem, and it's a big problem statewide. And although we've been talking a lot about colonoscopy, there are other ways that we can screen for colon cancer that are less expensive. For example, the stool cards that patients take home with them. So there are alternatives short of a colonoscopy if someone is uninsured or underinsured. I can't really speak to, you know, in my practice, I don't even look at patients' insurance, so I'm sure every practice is a little bit different. I can't really speak to the issue about passing people over. I would hope that we wouldn't take self-pay patients and not use anesthesia for their colonoscopies.
So I think you actually raise up a couple of interesting points. First is that your father had polyps, and your doctor recommended that you have screening. And I think that's the perfect recommendation. That does put you in a high-risk screening category, and your screening was appropriate. The second is the use of colonoscopy for the screening and the plus or minus some type of sedation, as you point out. Sedation is certainly a standard thing, but I've done several colonoscopies on unsedated patients per their request. So it's not out of the realm of normal. It would certainly be out of the realm of normal to not offer you sedation. And it's hard for me to imagine, again, like Dr. Locante's practice, we're at the university, so don't even pay much attention to that sort of thing. So it's hard to imagine not offering a patient, you know, standard of care therapy based on their
insurance.
So it's questionable for sure. But again, it can be done without sedation if that's something you don't want to do.
Yeah, a caller left a note that she had had colonoscopies without and had no problem. Seemed like it seemed like an unnecessary risk.
Right. And that's some people's view.
Yeah.
We have an email from Marion DePeer. My husband was diagnosed with colon cancer in 2000 after a routine colonoscopy. It was stage one and surgically removed. The physician at the time called him a poster child for colonoscopies. No chemotherapy or radiation was recommended. My husband continued to have regular colonoscopies, which are all clear. 5 years later, he died of colon cancer that had spread to his lungs and liver. Should he have received a preventive chemotherapy, or is this something, I don't know whether he should have. You would never be able to answer that question, but is that sometimes done?
So for stage one colon cancer, it is not standard to give what we would call adjuvant or post-surgical chemotherapy. Stage two, it's controversial. There are some patients where we do, and stage three, it's standard. That's purely because the risk of recurrence is much higher as you get up in stage. And chemotherapy is risky. Patients die from chemotherapy side effects, so you have to definitely have a benefit relative to the risk. For a stage one patient, the risk of the chemo would far outweigh the benefit. The other thing to mention is that we know now, and we may not have known back in 2000, that in addition to removing part of the colon, it's important to sample the lymph nodes around that area, and maybe he didn't have adequate sampling of that. I'm just postulating.
Yeah. Would you have pros and cons of colonoscopy versus the fecal occult blood test? Also, would you comment on any relationships between Crohn's disease and colorectal cancer? Email from Anna.
Oh, sure. Great questions, Anna. So, pros and cons. So first of all, if we think about screening, I think you think about screening in two different ways. One way is screening for cancer. The other is screening for polyps and early cancer. To screen for cancer itself, really, that's what your fecal occult blood test is doing. It's screening for a bleeding something in your colon or in your large intestine. What tends to bleed are malignancies, cancers. So that's really what we're trying to do, is detect cancer with that. There are other tests to test for cancer, and these are more of the new molecular diagnostics where we're screening your stool for genetic changes. The other optical type test, if it's colonoscopy, flexible sigmoidoscopy, even virtual colonoscopy with CT colonography, these are actually screening for pre-malignancies, so adenomas. So those are really the pros and cons of the various screening types. obviously in the con side, it seems like colonoscopy would fall out on the heavy pro, and why wouldn't you do it?
Sure.
Well, the con side is that it's a much more involved process, requires a full bowel preparation, requires some sedation usually.
Time away from work.
Time away from work.
Cost.
Yeah. So there are some cons to it. As far as the inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease being one of those, they both, Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, increase risk for colon cancer. So patients should fall under some type of a high-risk screening protocol, something to talk to your gastroenterologist about for sure.
Angie emailed us as well, and Malone, my mother and my father-in-law and his brother and their mother all died from colon cancer. My husband is 40. When should he get his first colonoscopy?
Well, we recommend, so that's a very strong family history.
Yeah.
Someone where if I was seeing them in clinic, I would wonder if they should be speaking to the genetic counselor to talk about genetic testing. There is somewhere around 5% of colon cancers that are linked to genetic syndromes. Assuming that one of those is not present, we generally recommend you start screening 10 years before the earliest person was diagnosed. So if the father was diagnosed at age 50, then the person who wrote in, their husband would start at age 40, for example.
Okay, so could be pretty quickly.
Yes.
In terms of Angie's. I'd certainly, if I had that family history, I would certainly be
yes.
sort of looking at getting it done sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It definitely raises eyebrows, doesn't it?
Jack and Superior, it's your turn now. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Possible causes of colon cancer. There are number three of them. How about the grill starter, the petroleum distillates that are used to start charcoal? And secondly, how about the grilled foods themselves? They're charred. They have this black cancer material on them, possibly. And thirdly, how about the smoke and grilling? Smoke from cigarettes gives cancer. How about the smoke and grilling? These three possible things.
Okay. Dr. LeConte?
Yeah, they're all possibilities. What we know for sure increases risk is decreased physical activity. So exercise clearly is helpful in preventing colon cancer, even in colon cancer survivors, preventing recurrence of their cancer. Consumption of red meat, obesity, cigarette smoking, alcohol use. The problem with identifying things that cause cancer is that there's a lot of other things going on. For example, in this case, those people are probably also eating red meat. How much is the red meat? How much is the charcoal? It can be very hard to tease that out. We would never do a study where we randomly put patients in a room full of, you know, lighter fluid.
Yeah.
So those are the things we know for sure increase your risk.
Thank you for calling. Jeanette in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, thank you. I'm 78 years old, and I've been having a colonoscopy procedure every 2 years for the last 14 years, except for the last time, which was about 4 years ago when it was aborted because I wasn't completely cleansed out. And I was so bitterly disappointed to have to go through this again that I wonder if you could recommend what I could do to avoid having this happen again.
Well, it's an interesting story, Jeanette. And I guess a lot of it is you know, would come down to why you're having the colonoscopies every 2 years and can you prevent having it again? And it'd certainly be something to revisit the need for colonoscopy every 2 years.
Well, I had, they found precancerous polyps.
Yeah. So, you know, I think this is something to revisit with your gastroenterologist, Jeanette. I mean, in general, a patient who has polyps on one screening exam, even if they're precancerous, depending on the situation, we'd recommend that patient follow up in a high-risk screening protocol, which would be every 5 years. Now, if those polyps were removed piecemeal fashion, if they weren't entirely removed, there might be some nuance to that recommendation. But every 2 years would certainly be aggressive, especially for 14 years running. So it'd be something, I think, to revisit. So to get back to your question being, can you do anything to perhaps not have to go through this again? I think maybe talk to your gastroenterologist.
And as far as prepping for the colonoscopy, we have you drink this gallon and a half of this stuff called Go Lightly, which is not really a lot of fun. She can go on a clear liquid diet for several days before her colonoscopy, and that will help increase the effectiveness of the prep.
Okay. And polyps came up again. Kathy emailed us and wondered, do all polyps eventually become cancerous?
Yeah, another great question, Kathy. And those, the answer is no. The easy answer is no, they don't all become malignant. There's some nuance again, and it depends on the type of polyps. There are multiple types of polyps. In general, we think adenomas, the pre-malignant polyps being the more common, do have malignant potentials, but they don't all. There are some benign polyps that have no malignant potential.
Let's go to Jerry in Oconomowoc next. Oops. Let's get to Jerry. Jerry, hi. Thank you for calling.
I hope my question is relevant. My father passed away at about my age. I'm 72 years, 3-4 months of colon cancer. He was diagnosed in August and passed away in October. So I've had colonoscopies from time to time, my last one last fall, but then in December I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I've just gone through radiation hormone treatment. I hope I've beat that, but because of the rather intimate relationship between the prostate and, of course, the whole colon situation, do I have to be more observant now in the future because of the prostate cancer per se?
You had radiation, is that right?
I had, yeah, hormone treatment in January, just a one shot of Eligard, and then 6 weeks of radiation.
Yeah, we think that radiating your prostate does slightly, and I emphasize the word slightly, increase your risk of rectal cancer because of where the rectum is located in the pelvis. I would think just with your family history alone, though, you should be aggressive about getting screened for colon cancer mm-hmm. and getting those polyps removed.
Yes. I called my doctor the other day, and I had colonoscopy just in October, but then diagnosed with prostate cancer in December. And it seems like perhaps I'm rushing it, but I don't want to be reckless in my attitude toward, you know.
Right.
It takes many years from getting radiation to developing even a polyp or a cancer, so I think you would still be okay if you get screened in probably 5 years. Is that what they recommended?
Probably.
That's fair enough. I know I've had polyps removed in the past, but
yep.
Yeah.
They were benign, I think.
Good for you for getting that.
Yeah, good for you.
Thanks, Jerry, for calling. Appreciate your call.
Great question.
I want to turn next to Audrey. Let's see here. Get Audrey on here. Hi, Audrey. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for you. I have ulcerative colitis, which is in the right section of my colon, and I have endometriosis in the left side of my colon. And the last time I had a colonoscopy, they did find one polyp, which was non-cancerous. Now, I do have flare-ups periodically with the endometriosis, which is now just starting to show up again. But my ulcerative colitis, I kind of keep under control by drinking aloe vera juice, and it has basically gone away. I was just wondering, what is my chances of getting cancer with the ulcerative colitis and also the endometriosis being in the colon?
Yeah, great question, Audrey. So the endometriosis does not increase your risk for colon cancer, even if it's in the colon. It just, as you know, it can cause some symptoms, some bleeding and some types of pain. The ulcerative colitis itself certainly increases your risk, even if it's quiescent, as you've implied, because of your aloe vera juice. It certainly increases your risk, but that risk is over time. So in general, we think of the risk being around 10% after 20 years. So what that means is if we have 100 patients with ulcerative colitis who've had ulcerative colitis for 20 years, 10 of them will develop colon cancer. So that's generally what we think. And as you live longer with your disease, that risk will go up. Basically, you need to be on a high-risk screening protocol. And usually after some point, it's every year screening with a patient for ulcerative colitis, even if they have quiescent disease.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you very much for calling. And Ruth in Maquanago will turn to you next. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. Thank you for letting me on your program.
Sure.
Interesting. I had a colonoscopy about 9 months ago, and it was the second or third that I've had, and they just happened to mention that I have a redundant colon. Can you tell me what the ramifications of that would be?
Yeah, that's another great question, Ruth, and I'll tackle it because I do colonoscopy, And what that really means is that your colon is difficult to get around. It's difficult to navigate with the colonoscope. And that's just the ramifications for you, perhaps, is that it might make it a little bit more difficult to screen the colon. It might be more uncomfortable. You might need more sedation to get through it. But in general, if you have a good, well-trained colonoscopist, a board-certified gastroenterologist or colorectal surgeon, they should be able to screen you efficiently. There are other screening modalities to consider as well. The CT colonography may be something that's useful in your case if it's covered.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you very much for calling. And Kate in Wisconsin Rapids, hi to you.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a now 20-year-old daughter who, we lived in Los Angeles at the time, at two, had diarrhea and bloody stools, saw a pediatric gastroenterologist, and won herself a colostomy as a two-year-old. Mm. Her entire colon bowel was all ulcerated. They put her on high-dose steroids, and then we weaned her down to a sulfadine at the end, the last couple months. The pathology was sent to Dr. Marvin Ament at UCLA, who gave me a call, and he said it had properties of Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, and if he had to name it anything, he'd call it ulcerative colitis. Having worked at UCLA, I decided I wouldn't name it anything and just see how she has had no episodes since. Has a little bit of irritable bowel, but my question is she somebody who should have an have a colonoscopy earlier than what would normally be advised?
Boy, hard to know. I mean, I always err on the side of saying yes, because, again, colon cancer is completely preventable when found early as a polyp. There clearly, from what you're saying about her path report, there was some element of either inflammation or disease going on that we think cancer arises from a cycle of injury and repair happening over and over again. So she clearly had a stage where she had some sort of injury that would make me concerned, and she was quite young when it happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck to you, Kate. And Dr. LeConte and Dr. Kennedy, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and love to have you back, and we do this again.
Sounds great.
Thank you both. Dr. Noel LeConte is an assistant professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Gregory Kennedy, assistant professor of general surgery at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And I believe Judith has posted on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, the cancer.gov website. So you can just go there and click on it if you want to learn more about the cancer or about trials that are going on.
We have